discerninghearts.com, and Spirit Catholic Radio, in cooperation with the Pope Paul VI Institute, presents Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. Dr. Hilgers, after being deeply touched by the teachings of Pope Paul VI's encyclical Humanae Vitae, founded the Pope Paul VI Institute for the Study of Human Reproduction in Omaha, Nebraska. Dr. Hilgers, along with his co-workers, developed the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. He would go on to discover Napro technology. In 1994, Pope John Paul II appointed him to full membership in the Pontifical Academy for Life. And with his wife Susan, Dr. Hilgers serves on the Pontifical Council for the Family. Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. One of the things that we're fighting against, an understanding between the difference of fertility control and fertility care.
Well, I think that, the viewpoint of Planned Parenthood, birth control, I mean, there's the word control is there for a reason. I'm not so sure that they thought it all through when they used that phrase. But
well, I think Margaret Sanger knew exactly what she was saying.
I think she did too, yeah. And it is extremely controlling. When we started our work back in 1976, really, I actually did my first research in 1968, but I had a little gap. I had to go get some more training. Mm-hmm. We developed a term called fertility appreciation. There were a couple of terms that were being bandied around, at least one term that was being bandied around at the time called fertility awareness. And we thought about that, and we kind of rejected it because that's not really what we were trying to do. We wanted to help people develop an appreciation for their fertility. So we use the term fertility appreciation, which is kind of long and bulky, but it gets the point across. And we have used that from the very beginning of our efforts and our work. But going back, 5 or 6 years ago now, we began to realize, probably had known this for a long time, that the term natural family planning actually is a bit counterproductive. If you're sitting on the airplane and somebody says, what do? And you say, well, I teach natural family planning. That if you want to sleep the rest of the flight, that's a good thing to tell them because they will shut off instantly. Mm-hmm. So we, for several years, actually, we thought about this and we felt that the word fertility care really says what it is we want to be. And in fact, have been for a long time because fertility care and fertility appreciation are very similar in terms of what they mean. And what they mean is that we care about our fertility, literally. I mean, it's not a big translation. It's something that we view, as I've said in the past, our fertility is something that's normal and healthy. It's a part of who we are. The big problem is we haven't understood it very well. And it's something that you just don't automatically understand. Somebody's got to teach you about it. If you get taught about it and you develop a sense of appreciation for it, then you can actually care about it. And then you take care of it also. These
right.
are all kind of words that sort of unite together under the word fertility care. But it's not a controlling thing at all. It's very much a system where we can understand our fertility and our infertility that come and go each cycle. And then we can utilize that information depending upon the mutual decisions of the married couple to either achieve or avoid pregnancy. And so there's an old term that used to be used a lot in the natural family planning circles. It was called periodic abstinence. But it's not about periodic abstinence. It's about making selective choices. It's about intercourse. It's not about abstinence. If you think about people on the birth control pill, people who've been sterilized, people who've had an IUD or a condom, whatever it is, they're all abstaining at various times. Mm-hmm. In fact, most of the time. So periodic abstinence is not unique to a natural method, and it was a misnomer, but it conveyed a real negative image. And so for many people, it was to their sort of delight that they could continue that bad image. Mm-hmm. And of course, we in the natural family planning arena took it on, unfortunately, without questioning it. But it's not about abstinence. It's not about periodic abstinence. It's about understanding your fertility and your infertility and making good, positive choices with regard to it. So the choices you're making are whether or not to have intercourse, not whether or not to abstain. And so this all comes as a result of an appreciation for your fertility.
I hope this doesn't sound hokey, but it just sounds so nurturing. it's almost as though it seems natural to what it is to be a creature that God has created, because even in every aspect, you see a time for everything, a time for every purpose. And it's, as you said, it doesn't seem as though it's abstaining. It's about, well, is it that chastity, that chasteness that gives to the other? And maybe part of that is allowing that time to pass until it's the right time.
Yeah, I mean, what you're making is a decision as to the best time to have intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
And the best time may be the time of fertility. There's no penalty to using a time of fertility to have intercourse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a repercussion, or there's a outcome of that, which often will be a baby. So people have to take that into consideration as they're making their decisions. But the baby's never out of the consideration when you think of it from this point of view and this perspective. And this is what we're doing with the terms, at least fertility care. And you can see easily how different it is than fertility control. We're not trying to control anything or anybody. We're trying to teach and educate people so they understand their fertility, know their fertility, and make good decisions with regard to their fertility. And when they're able to do that, it is nurturing. It helps the married couple mature in their relationship, particularly their sexual relationship, because also in the Creighton model, we teach our couples very specifically that our sexuality is about our whole person, who we are as an individual human being.
Mm-hmm.
We have been created by God as male and female. Try as I could never be a female, so I better get comfortable with my maleness. Try as you have, or other people may have, to be a female or to kind of get away from that.
Right.
They can't get away from it because that's who they are. So it's good. I mean, it's really good to develop a real comfort with who you are, not only as a human being, but as a human sexual person.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that when we talk to our married couples or the engaged couples that we teach, it's a whole new idea to them. They've never thought about it, and it's very helpful because they can then begin to think about their sexuality in more than just physical terms. And that's not in any way to say that the physical aspects of it are not good, because they are. They're very good. But
mm-hmm.
what happens when you put the emphasis only on the physical aspects is you lose a lot of the other aspects. If you keep it in a multidimensional framework, you don't lose the physical, but you gain the spiritual, the intellectual, the creative, the emotional components of your relationship. What we refer to actually as SPICE, spiritual, physical, intellectual, creative, and emotional or psychological components of your relationship. It's a multidimensional view of human sexuality. So fertility care then, even when you get a little bit further into it, conceptually is a lot different than anything that could be called fertility control or fertility birth control or whatever.
It is more than just a different words where you have fertility control over here or fertility care, because as you've just pointed out, as you were speaking, I had that image of it's about your disposition of heart and disposition of soul, because you could have two people who will give a certain amount of money to a charity. One person gives it because they get a tax write-off by giving to this charity. This other person gives to this charity because they really want to help further the mission of that charity. This person who's giving for the tax write-off has a different motivation than the person who's giving it out of the charity of love,
yeah,
to help support a cause. And that's really the difference, isn't it?
It is. It is very much the difference. And we talk about people who have a fertility care heart.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting you mentioned the word heart, because we use that phrase a lot. You can tell people who come to this with a yearning to better understand the wholeness of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the fertility care heart. As opposed to those people who may be forced to come to, say, an introductory presentation because somebody told them you got to do this or that or for whatever reason.
Ultimately, for a couple that enters into this, it's not just about them, about wanting to understand their own fertility and their own bodies, but it's also wanting to know about the other person.
That's
and
right.
How can they be best served in the truest sense of servant?
You know, one of the things that that we hear frequently is that men don't like this because it involves abstinence, of course. And actually, it's quite the opposite.
Yeah.
And we've done some sort of preliminary, but they've been fairly large studies of this, and the men are almost universally supportive of it. For one reason, they understand their wife. They understand the physiology of what's happening in their body during the course of this cycle. that's very helpful to them. It's obviously helpful to her, and they both can mesh together because of that mutual knowledge. And as a result, the men become actually many times big supporters in all of this, which is what they should be in a way. I mean, women, there's certain things they have to do to make this system work, but it goes a whole lot easier if they have the support of their spouse, and there's not a lot of pressure on them to do different things and kind of get off track.
The care of fertility is truly at the heart of a marital relationship. I mean, we've had so much writing, not only by Pope Paul VI, but by John Paul II in Theology of the Body, and even in Deus Caritas Est by Benedict XVI, mm-hmm. about what it is, why do we come together as male and female? I mean, to join together in that fidelity of love where God is at the center. So much so now our society tells you that that's not even a value. When the word of the day is, are you able to hook up this weekend?
Yeah.
They're looking for something that they're not going to be able to find.
Well, in order to get from A to B, you have to take a path from A to B, no matter what that path is. It may have pebbles on it, maybe paved, maybe different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You never get from A to B by making those wrong choices. You can't get to the substance of who you are as a person and who your spouse is as a person and what that relationship between the two of you are if you mm-hmm. continue to deny components of who you are that are important, vital, and healthy. So we've got to reach people better to be able to teach them and educate these things because there's so much good to be accomplished. I'm in the process of, it may be a couple years before I get this little project done, but one of the things I want to do is I've been working with a group of women who our core group for 30 years now, 31 years, but another group who joined up with us just a few years after that, and they've been teaching the Crate Model system now for 25 to 30 years of their professional life. And what I want them to do is to write, what is it about this work that commits you to continue to provide this service? Because nobody's getting rich off of this thing. It's a work of the heart. It's a work of the soul to a certain extent. I know what their answer in some ways is going to be. I can't quote them, but they see the enormous value that this information has to those couples. They see it every day when they're teaching these couples, usually because we try to teach as much as we can with couples. You see the men and you see the women. They have different reactions to it all, but it's all very good and positive as a general rule. Not that there's not struggles.
Mm-hmm.
Life has struggles. But most of those struggles actually strengthen the relationship because as a part of all of this, you learn a little bit how to resolve some of the struggles and how to resolve some of the conflict. And with contraception, you don't have there's no format for resolving it. You just get bitter. You just get regret. You just get frustration. You just get antagonistic towards your spouse or whatever. And there's no system within it to help resolve any conflict. And I think that's one reason why the divorce rate goes up so much. But these women now who I've worked with for all of these years have had this really quite good, healthy, close relationship with these couples over all of these years. And the fulfillment that they get in providing this to these people is enormous and so gratifying that they've continued the work all of these years and sometimes at great struggle financially and for other reasons because there hasn't been a lot of resources. We met a couple recently, a couple that we never had met before in our lives, and we were in another city giving some talks, and this couple came to us, and they had been using the Crate Model system for 21 years.
Wow.
And it dawned on me that we have been at this a long time.
Yeah.
But I never knew it. But as the woman started talking, she says, you saved our relationship. You saved our marriage. And, I mean, I didn't really save their marriage. They saved their own marriage. But this vehicle that they learned and how to understand how their bodies worked and how they could communicate and how they could appreciate their sexuality and how they could appreciate their fertility did have a major impact on how they communicated with each other, how they worked with each other, and how they grew with each other and nurtured, getting back to that concept of nurturing, how they nurtured their own relationship and how strong it is now, that marital bonding that I referred to in an earlier episode. There's a bonding that occurs which is like super glue.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about a divorce in that situation because it's so strong There's such a strong strength of relationship, and it just evolves because of this relationship that you have with your fertility and your spouse, and understanding who you are on another level. That's very intimate, very good, in many ways very holy. We talk about a sort of a Trinitarian proposal when it comes to the creation of a new child. You can sort of say, well, you need a man and a woman to create a new child. So that's sort of an equation of 1 + 1 = 1.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really more than that. It's 1 + 1 + 1 = 1. And so you have a man, you have a woman, and you have God, who all come together to create this new life. And the man and the woman contribute the substance of the material, the biology of this child, and God infuses this eternal soul. And you start thinking along those lines, which is really remarkable and good and holy. I tell you, it blows your mind at what you're accomplishing in your relationships, and it's a result you can't even, the word fertility control doesn't even fit, mm-hmm. doesn't even come into your brain because there's no place for it.
We'll return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers in just a moment.
Spirit Catholic Radio presents Faith Check. Here's Greg Yule.
Welcome to Faith Check. Many people ask why the Church is against birth control if it allows natural family planning to avoid pregnancy. The Catholic teaching that it is a sin to use contraception is nothing new, but the perennial teaching of Judeo-Christian morality. Only in the 1930s did any Christians begin teaching that contraception could be morally acceptable. The sexual union between a husband and wife is a renewal of the wedding vows, which say that I love you freely, totally, faithfully, and fruitfully. To come together in intimacy while deliberately sterilizing the act goes against the intrinsic meaning of intercourse. It says, I love you, but not your fertility. When a couple has discerned that there are serious reasons to avoid a pregnancy, there's nothing sinful about periodic abstinence during the fertile times of the month. Intercourse still remains a renewal of the wedding vows, a total gift of self that is open to the authentic life-giving meaning of sex. Divorce rates among couples using natural family planning are almost non-existent because couples grow in self-control and respect for one another's bodies, which leads to healthier relationships and even more passion and intimacy. This is Greg Yule for Faith Check.
We now return to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. It's as though you have to go back into your mutual corners emotionally and relationship-wise. Unlike when you are involved in the Creighton model or natural family planning, because you are still communicating, there's still that recognition, okay, we may at this point feel we need to have children at a different time or to be able to space, which the Church, if I'm not mistaken, Dr. Hilgers, doesn't say don't grow a family to the best of your ability. I mean, you can plan,
yeah.
But you should be doing that united. Where birth control is a different whole mindset. It's where you're going to, again, shut off your body, shut off the thing. You go over in this corner, yeah. You go in that corner, and we begin taking again,
yeah.
Instead of working together again.
No, you're absolutely right. And yeah, actually, in Humanae Vitae, the term responsible parenthood is used, and the plan your family is used. That terminology is used in Humanae Vitae. Humanae Vitae gives some general guidelines about how we do that. We always do it in collaboration with God. We always do it out of generosity. We always do it consistent with the patterns of love between a man and a woman, and do it prayerfully. I mean, these are the basic guidelines to which couples should make their decisions. And then at the same time, because the Creighton model has such a health aspect to it all,
mm-hmm.
The continued charting and utilization of the information is really important. Now, getting back to the communication part of it all, we've done these surveys that I mentioned earlier. And we've actually had this come up several times where they'll hand write in the idea that if you can talk about mucus, you can talk about anything in your relationship.
I'll testify to that.
And,
yes,
but if you actually think about that, there's a lot of truth to that. If you can't talk about these things, there's probably a little bit of a twitch in your relationship. But
that's
this
right.
Actually encourages talking about silly, stupid things in a way. They're not silly and stupid, but. They may seem that way.
It's a mutual sharing. I mean, I'll freely admit that my husband and I have had conversations like that. And believe it or not, it's drawn us closer.
Yeah. No,
I mean,
it does.
I can share anything
absolutely.
With him.
Absolutely. No, it does. It absolutely does.
Yep.
And the notion that you can talk about that, communicate about it, means that you can talk about anything is true.
Yep.
That was the point I was trying to really get at, because I totally believe in that. And I'm not saying it is silly. I'm only saying that that's a kind of perception of it. It's part of the way that the couples are brought into this ongoing ability to communicate with each other. And of course, you have to. With every new cycle, there's the potential for new life, and you have to communicate on that. And if your decision is not to have children at that time, that may be how you will enact your decisions for that particular cycle. Mm-hmm. And if you decide there are children that you want, then that'll enact those decisions as well. You use the days that are fertile. It's really a system of making decisions. We still get people into our program who are encumbered with a lot of old ideas of, you know, well, this thing about abstinence, for example, always comes up. But if we can just educate them and reach them a little bit, they begin to see a different way of seeing this, and they don't feel deprived. See, what most people think of a natural method, they feel like deprivation. Mm-hmm. They're like being deprived. The church is depriving me of this. Well, the church isn't depriving you of anything. In fact, the church is giving you a great gift. And with that gift, you're able to grow in your relationship, mature in your relationship, understand the sexuality in your relationship, and understand each other better. And that bonding to the relationship just continues to get stronger and stronger. Now, how can that be something that's bad for the relationship? It's absolutely a gift.
It strengthens families. It strengthens relationships. You've seen what secular society, culture, has offered. And look at, again, we keep talking about this, but look at the divorce rate. Look at the depression rates. Look at how it has adversely affected a culture where we keep scratching our heads saying, how did we get here? And yet here's the church offering us a gift. And well, it works.
Yeah, and it works. I've always said that the church is standing on a mountaintop. And they ought to be broadcasting to the world the solution that they know to be the answer to all of the problems that are confronting humanity and particularly our culture. They seem reticent to want to stand on that mountaintop. They seem reticent to want to broadcast that. But we're going to have to keep working on that, because it's that important. It's that critical. If you think about it, the church is the only one talking about this right now. You know, there was a big split in 1930 with all the Protestant denominations. Mm. Years ago, they were all Christian denominations were against contraception. But in 1930, it split, and now the Catholic Church is the only one sitting there alone. Now, that's hard. I'm sure it's hard on the bishops. It's hard on everybody to a certain extent. But on the other hand, I'm a cradle Catholic, and as a cradle Catholic, I'm really proud of this church that has stood up to this. And I'm grateful to them. I don't know where I'd be if it weren't for them, you know? And I'm one of the original, I'm not a dissenter, but I'm like an original antagonist to authority. I grew up in the 60s, you know. Well, I grew up in the 60s. You rebelled at different things, but the church's teaching is so magnificent. But you have to experience it to a great extent. You can't always learn it just by somebody teaching you it. I remember a couple who came to us who had been on birth control pills for 10 years, and they said they had no children. They said their decision was, we want to use this natural method permanently to avoid pregnancy. Well, from a Catholic point of view, that would be not generous. That would not be a good use of a natural method. So we had to decide, should we teach them or not teach them? Well, our view is that we should teach them, because we're not personally responsible for that. We can only teach them what we know and the goodness of what we know. And then we like to say sometimes it works its magic on people. Well, 6 months later, they were using days of fertility. Mm. And so we asked them, I thought you said that you were going to permanently avoid pregnancy. And she said, well, that was before I began to see my fertility come and go every month. I began to think about this. I had never seen that before. I didn't really know that I had a fertility that came and went every month.
Right.
You know, so it did. It had an internal, psychological, intellectual, and spiritual a way of transforming her and her husband. So anyway, these things do happen. They're real. More and more as we get the message out, people will be able to better understand it, I hope, and get on the bandwagon, the fertility care bandwagon.
Just to go back to Margaret Sanger, I hate to bring her into the conversation, but all you have to do is read her own writings from her own birth control magazine to see that she was about death. It was about eugenics.
Yep.
It was not for the common good. And it was for the select few.
Absolutely. She was a first-class eugenicist. It's sort of interesting to look at the people that were experimented on to develop the birth control pill versus those who were experimented on, if you can put it that way, to develop the crate model. The women who were experimented on for the birth control pill were poor women in Puerto Rico. The women who were, quote, experimented on to develop the crate model system were from all walks of life. In fact, most of them more educated than others even. So there was no effort or even implication that we were maybe taking advantage of a particular population of people. But the people who did the original birth control pill work definitely took advantage of a poverty-stricken, probably less than educated group of women who probably didn't know what they're putting in their mouth.
Yeah, all you'd have to do is go to Johnson & Johnson's website and take a look at the number of lawsuits that are springing up from the patch and from the rods that have been placed in women. And I doubt that there are any suits out there for crate model or for fertility care, because it's not about hurting women or a percentage. It's okay to have a percentage of women. We can handle a certain percentage of lawsuits.
Yeah.
This is about each woman, each couple.
Well, you are right. There are no lawsuits out there. We've been at it over 30 years. And
how about that?
Our record is clean. But there have been a lot of lawsuits with regard to all of the others, and it's a big problem.
Yeah.
A lot of them are settled out of court, so they never reach the public eye.
If even a percentage is damaged, is it worth it?
Yeah. No. In fact,
no.
In our textbook, I made a comment. One of the doctors, and this is about 10 years ago, but they wrote a paper on the relationship of different types of cancers. The comment was made by the doctor. He says, well, taking the birth control pill does increase the risk of breast cancer, cervical cancer, and liver cancer. But on the other hand, it decreases the endometrial cancer and ovarian cancer. So all in all, he says, it has a negligible effect.
Oh, boy.
And I thought to myself, well, what if you're the woman who got the breast cancer or the cervical cancer or the liver tumor? I mean, is that negligible? I don't think so.
That's right.
And if that's preventable just by not taking that medication or birth control pill. We've gotten to the point in medicine where we deal with groups of people and we make our decisions based on that. We've lost this notion of medicine being at the service of the individual human person. Everything is based upon population-related studies of some sort or another.
Dr. Thomas Hilger is one of the wisest of fertility care experts. We thank you very much for being with us again, and we look forward to our next session.
Thank you very much, Chris. Great being here.
You've been listening to Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers. To hear and or to download this episode, along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. To learn more about the work of Dr. Hilgers and the Pope Paul VI Institute, go to popepaulvi.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com, Spirit Catholic Radio, and the Pope Paul VI Institute. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Your Fertility Care Consult with Dr. Thomas Hilgers.